I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk to you kind of about this new robotics initiative for cotton harvest that we're considering. You've already seen a couple presentations today, and I'll go through more about who all these co-authors are and what they're doing later. That background image is Kerry Hughey on a phenotyping tractor, and I just use that as background because really when we started seeing what we could learn by phenotyping these plants, kind of led to this idea that we could do robotic harvest. So what I want to talk to you about is why are we going to do something as silly as think about robotic harvest. Some of my board members think it's the greatest idea in the world, and some of them think I'm pretty stupid. So we have to give this a lot of thought. And I'm not saying it's a done deal. This is really a feasibility study at this point. So I'm going to give you a current status where I think robots are for agriculture, talk about an overview of the projects that we're sponsoring on this, and like I said, you've heard from some of them, and then talk about some preliminary numbers and concepts. One of the things, I had that lady hand harvesting in India. You know, most of India is still hand harvest. A lot of China is still hand harvested. And we get, you know, we actually get complaints from foreign mills that we have more nips and stuff and our cotton's dirtier. So there are some advantages that we'll talk about later, but that will help us catch up with the competition around the world. So how do we end up at robots? Well, like I said, you know, some of you and at Larkin Martin's back there, she's one of the first farmers I know that used Greenseeker to manage nitrogen on her farm. So we've done sensor-based management for a while, still struggling to figure that out. But that's been there. This high-throughput phenotyping where we're putting these tractors in the field and using LIDAR and 3D vision where we can make a 3D model of the plant and we know how far away it is. So we've got that 3D model. Now all we need is a control system to go pick that ball off. So that kind of said, okay, we're getting there. And this machine vision, it's really amazing, all the open source machine vision tools that are out there. This contamination system that you're seeing sitting out in the hall here next to the Jenners is using machine vision to find plastic, and it's running on a $50 Raspberry Pi. So where the software is amazing. What I think's really going to drive agricultural robots is herbicide failures. You know, that's what the weed scientist, there's a paper out there that's Weed Science in 2050, and one of the things they say is we're looking at a loss of herbicides, and one of the solutions could be robots to get these rogue weeds. Obviously, labor is a shortage. One of the reasons we got that green picker is not because it's a great bargain; it's because it's a labor savings, and that's what most producers I've talked to, Mr. Hargett, it's about labor. It's not about the cost. And so, when you don't have labor, saving labor is priceless. And then finally, you know, we've got auto steer equipment. A lot of this stuff is really coming together. It's just unavoidable. I did not want to bring this to my board because I knew I was going to get laughed at. And so the other thing is, why do I want to talk about harvest? Because I know it's going to start with weeds. You know, our current system is expensive. Mr. Hargett told us we're going to have plastic problems. We got plastic problems. You know, $1 million for a machine that just picks cotton is a problem. And then on top of that, this is a very heavy machine, and there's soil compaction risk. And again, you're spending that $1 million for only, a couple months of use. Now, actually, I do like these machines. We've got Jeff Wigdahl here from Deere, too, so I can't be too mean. But no, you know, they have provided that labor savings. They provide a lot of efficiency. But now we got to do things in 2,000-acre increments. And so you can't go from, 100 acres of cotton to 500 acres of cotton. You got to go 2,000 acres, 4,000 acres, 6,000 acres. So it's not real scalable. So why robotic harvest? Again, the weeds are going to be driving this. If we can harvest cotton frequently, and this is the concept I'm trying to start with, like 25 times during the season, we reduce risk from hurricanes. How many people would have liked to have had their cotton in before the hurricanes hit us, or have 75% of it harvested? Wouldn't that have been nice? We don't have to worry about, we have reduced risk from aphids and whiteflies. Sticky cotton becomes less of a problem. We're going to preserve fiber quality. We're going to reduce weathering and also reduce the need for cleaning at the gin. I'll say more about that later. And then the theory is, by harvesting these bolls frequently, they're all cohorts, so they will have much more uniform fiber properties, which will be valuable to a textile mill. And again, coming back to scalable, I'm thinking a robot for every 11 acres, and that scares the heck out of some of my farmers. They don't want 100 robots on their farm. On the other hand, it means we can go from 11 acres of cotton to 22 acres. It's much more scalable. Also, I do see the time where this could be solar powered. So no more diesel fuel. It's not only going to save money, it's going to make, you know, the greenhouse gas thing look good. And then a key thing, multifunctional. These will not just be harvesting robots. You're going to hear from Joe's student next. That's a picture of his robot on the right. And that bottom platform is something we could buy off the shelf. And all the motion, the autonomous, the driving through the field, a lot of it's already built into that. And so Joe's is working on the harvester, but then this year him and Glenn are going to start looking at turning it into a weeder as well. And then finally, you know, this, even if this turns out to be a no-go and we go through the economic analysis and say, yeah, that was a stupid idea, some of the things we've already learned are going to have benefits. Some of the things you saw, this machine vision, the ability for researchers to be able to do these detailed assessments of the plant, even to have a robot harvester for research is going to be valuable. So it's not going to be a completely wasted effort. So how long is this going to take? I use a 10-year, and I guess they're going to hold me accountable, so now I guess I have to say 9 years. Technically, 2018 is when this started. Can't always be 10 years away. But, you know, in some ways I get scared. I think, are we crazy? But, no, think about UAVs. If you've never flown a UAV, they are amazing now. You draw a box around your field, and you hit go. And that thing flies, and it comes and lands, and you upload your maps, and they all get stitched, and it's just incredible. If you ever tried to fly one of those quadcopter cheap ones without the assistance, they are very hard to fly. I cannot fly one. But I can fly that one, and it has, you know, anyhow. We have self-driving cars on the streets. We have auto-steer tractors. We've got autonomous sprayers. In the top right of that picture is an automated robotic weeder out of a company out of Europe. So that's an autonomous weeder. It sprays it microdoses herbicides. I wish, from the herbicide resistance standpoint, I don't know why, I guess it takes too much energy to actually pull the weed out. But anyway, I actually asked for them to quote me a price, and they said they weren't ready to sell into the U.S. yet. But that's out there. Another thing, in China and in India, there are some researchers that have built little robotic arms that in the lab can harvest the cotton bowl. So we know it can be done. So, you know, I think, and you know, we've got Blue River out there that's doing machine vision to find weeds. And then, again, you saw some of the presentations earlier where the machine vision can find bowls. We've got prototypes for fresh fruit harvest. This stuff is really coming a lot faster than I thought. This is kind of an overview of all the projects, and I put the times on here because we missed some of the talks. But, you know, all these things are recorded. So if you want to go back and look, these first collection were all in this session, an engineering session. Terry Griffin will be presenting on what they're doing to develop an economic model in the economics session tomorrow morning. And then the one that's not in this session, we missed Galen Morgan and James Griffin's presentation at 1:30 today. Was in the agronomy session, but that's where they've been doing the frequent harvest to really get an understanding of what's the fiber quality benefits. There on the right is the spider sprayer that Glenn's team is working on to make autonomous, and it's got a little Chinese handheld cotton harvester there that they're working on. So you've heard some about that already. I'll say a little more about Galen's project too. Another thing that I get challenged on is, you know, okay, so we can get the machine to go out there and pick it. What then? So big deal. You know, so how are we going to handle the logistics? And so Alex Thomason is in here, and he gave a little presentation. He's been looking at, you know, what could we even gin it on the robot? Or maybe we gin it in the field. But the other thing he's looking at, well, how do we handle that material in the field? Joe Maha, also in that picture on the top right, that's his concept. Not, that shows a once-over harvest. I really want us to try to do frequent harvest. But the idea, a concept he's conveying there of the swarm of machines that are talking to each other. You can even have UAVs that are out scouting the fields and saying, okay, guys, this field's ready. It's ready for defoliate. I mean, or, you know, there's a lot of bowls, open bowls here. Let's all go over here. So that, you know, all that logistics, really that's something that's out there. A lot of warehouses are starting to use robotics. And so a lot of coordination and materials handling is already being developed, so I feel confident that we can pull that off. Another thing I've got challenged, again, my producers have said, I don't want to manage robots. I just don't want to deal with it. So there's actually an idea of some people hiring robots the way you hire people and paying by the hour. But there could, and really my point there is, someone could provide a service where they bring out robots to your farm, and they're charged with managing them, repairing them, worrying about all the details. But ultimately, I think we could get it to a point where they'll be pretty self-contained and not cause too much trouble. Talk about the implications for ginning. You know, on the left there, and I added in plastic removal. I don't quite have that there in place. But, you know, about 10 processes to do picker cotton, stripper cotton, this would be a longer list. If we could go to robotic harvest, we don't need to do a lot of cleaning, especially if we're picking it green. When the leaves are green, they're not all crinkly and the bracts aren't breaking off. We should have very little foreign matter in that cotton that we bring in. So we could just bring it into a module feeder, maybe put it through a dryer. Moisture is still going to be a challenge for us. Maybe have an extractor feeder to pick up anything that might get us snucked in, and then just the gin stand. So that should save some money and efficiency if we don't gin it in the field. Looking at some numbers, just to think about what we're dealing with here. Let's say I don't pay list price. I buy a used picker, and I pay $750,000 for it, and I do 2,000 acres with that. That's $375. If we get this thing to go about how fast you can walk, about 3 miles an hour, and it does each side of a row, so essentially it's doing a row at 3 miles an hour, a 40-inch row, that's about 11 acres in 9 hours. So if we can get 11 acres, and if you can, just the capital cost, I can already spend $4,000 on my robot for cotton harvest. And that, you know, obviously we're going to allocate some of that cost to other operations. But that's a good chunk of money to start with. And then we don't have to put diesel in it. We don't have to serve it as frequently. Not to say this isn't without challenges. I would say we got a 3-bale cotton crop, all right? And we're going to harvest it 25 times. So let's say it were uniformly distributed. That's 60 pounds we'd be harvesting each event. Even when we get it down to 60 pounds per acre, that's still going to be about 4 bowls a second we need to get if we're moving 3 miles an hour. So that's not a trivial problem, but it's, I think, doable, all right? Other thing is about how much storage will we have. If we have, it's very typical to have a third mile row, that's about 18 pounds of seed cotton we'd need to be able to carry. But that's not a problem. That should not be a problem. We could probably do more than that. That would be, you know, less than 2 cubic feet. So we wouldn't need a big basket behind it. On the frequent harvest studies, this is going to be an important part of the economic analysis. You know, when you look at the data USDA puts out there, on average, we're about 47 days from the day that bowl opens till the first bowl opens until it's harvested. So, again, there's that risk out there. So we had 3 studies this year being led by Galen and a student, one in Texas, in East Texas, high yielding, one in stripper cotton, and one in Georgia. And so we're trying to get an idea of what is the actual increase in fiber uniformity and fiber quality to get an idea of what is the increased value we get from preserving that quality. This is a little bit of a slide from James, and just to show some really preliminary results from one site. And so basically the blue was machine picked all at once, and the green was hand picked multiple times. And just looking at the loan value, not accounting for the fact some of these fiber properties are more uniform, there was definitely, and this was mainly from quality, that the quality was significantly improved. And so there was greater loan value for that, as we would have expected. So that's promising. Really, you know, Cotton Incorporated is not going in the robotics business. So really what we're trying to do is get a baseline amount of data to document, you know, is this feasible? If it is feasible, what are the numbers? What do you have to strive for? What could this look like? You know, and hopefully some private sector people will pick this up eventually. This is like we're forming a database to work from. And I'm really impressed with a lot of these open source tools. And there's even this open source robotics. I won't say too much, but you know, the robot that Joe's using is running an open source code. It's just really amazing how this can be easy to collaborate with as well. So I'm really excited about it. And I, you know, really, if you're really interested and you're not leaving the Beltwide right away, we're going to continue some of these discussions with researchers at noon on Thursday. So if you're interested in that and haven't signed up, let me know. That's mainly a research meeting, so it's going to be pretty painful. So he may not want to show up. So. All right, with that, I'm done.
All right. Any questions for Ed? Or do you want to take questions?
Yeah, sure. Yes, Brian. Maybe not every day, but enough so that every time there's a flush of open bowls, they're not sitting out there more than a day. So it may not be every day. And that's something from Galen's data. We're going to get a sense of, you know, the rate those bowls are opening on different varieties. That's, you know, there's going to be a variety component to this. But, yeah, the frequency, I just threw out 25 times is something really frequent. You know, so maybe every other day is, maybe it won't need, you know, maybe some parts of the season needs to be every day. Some parts of the season, maybe once a week. I don't know. Good question, though. All right.
All right,
hey, thank you.
You.